thank you for being a friend.
WandaVision.
Let's go! It's the Rosie O'Donnell Show!
You've arrived here at a critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I am Brandi Crawford Eryu.
We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows you would watch on a loop forever?
That's right. So each episode, our guests will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows. And they're going to choose from three genres of TV: drama, comedy, and all things unscripted.
That's right. And now let's get to our guest this week and find out what's on their BFF criteria. We're very excited to have this guest with us today. He's the co-host of the Shaken and Disturbed podcast. Please welcome John Thrasher.
Hi, guys.
Hey, John. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, John.
Thanks for having me. This is such an awesome concept, and I can't believe I was asked to be on it. So thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Super happy to have you. How was it putting your list together? Just kind of before we get into specifics, how did you find putting together your criteria?
You know what? This might be, I have a little bit of a background. I've worked in television, but you know, I don't watch over the years. I'm not a huge TV person. Dan, I know you will sit down and binge 900 hours of a TV show, it sounds like, based on how well I know you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I am not like that. So it was kind of tough to kind of dip into not just what I've liked recently, but I think, you know, we'll get into my picks in a second, but like what really influenced me growing up that I still like so much. So it was kind of tough, but I'm really confident in my picks. I think we'll just put it that way.
Well, I'm super excited to talk about them. But first, before we get to your BFF criteria, we want to know a little bit about your personal TV history. So let's start with revealing the shows that almost made your list. So these are the shows that did not make your top six, but they only just missed the cut. So they might not be your TV BFFs, but like they're still like pretty good friends.
Yeah, they're definitely my friends with benefits, I think I would say, right if you on. Don't mind me saying. My first pick is, and you know, I can't believe, I will say during this exercise, I can't believe it went to this spot as the almost. It is Lost.
Ooh, Lost was great. Did you watch Lost, yeah. Brandi? I remember watching it and loving it. And for me, it was started really strong, but the ending was the last season or two was a little tricky, you know?
That's a great way to put that, Dan.
That was tricky.
Very diplomatic.
So respectful, yeah.
I never got into Lost. I'm not sure what I would have been watching at the time instead of Lost. Oh, God, I was probably watching like SVU on USA. It's probably what I was doing.
This would have been what, circa like 2004 to 2009-ish, I want to say it aired.
Maybe 2010. I remember watching the finale in my Brooklyn apartment. I think that would have been 2010.
You know what? If it started in 2004, that's how come I didn't watch it, because 2004 was the year I moved to New York, and like I really did not have a good TV situation going on.
So you had other concerns,
and there was no streaming back then, so you couldn't really like, you know, even like find someone's login. You had to actually...
And there was no DVR in 2004.
Right.
That's right. I'm an elder millennial. Everyone, an elder millennial.
Me too. You know what's funny? I remember watching that finale and I actually enjoyed it. I'm one of the few, I think, that was like satisfied with the finale. And I remember I had a TiVo at the time and it stayed on my TiVo for months and I would rewatch it from time to time. John, what were your thoughts on the later seasons, the finale and all that?
Yeah. You know, those mid seasons, I should have looked it up. I don't remember how many seasons it ran. I think six or seven or something.
Six total, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I caught on to it around season two or three, I want to say. And it was the first show in my life where every episode was so fascinating in the sense that it was not only fun to watch, but it left you really thinking about what's to come, and you would talk to all your friends about it. It was the ultimate water cooler show, and it was such one of the most powerful kind of appointment viewing television shows. Like, you had to see what happened every single episode. But I will say, you know, I was so invested in the characters. And the one thing, the other thing I wanted to mention about Lost, it was the first time I openly wept about a character dying on television.
And
spoiler alert, you know, guys, it's been out for quite a while. I hope I'm not spoiling Lost for you guys listening. But when, I don't know if how familiar, I know, Dan, you just said you had watched it, but Brandy, there's this character named Charlie. And when he died, I don't even remember which season it was. I just was not expecting it. And I remember it was, I was in college. I was like binge watching every episode. It was like finals week, by the way, like that tells you how like responsible I am. And I would stay up watching the show. And when Charlie died, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I mean, he was a fan favorite character, and the way he died and how he sort of, in a sense, sacrificed himself.
The hand on the glass, iconic,
Not Penny's boat. Yeah, exactly. So it was just a lot for me emotionally. I feel very traumatized by that scene in particular. But Lost is one of those shows, like, I'm just waiting for them to reboot it in the streaming.
No way.
No way. Are you kidding?
I don't think Damon Lindelof wants any part of getting back into Lost.
That might be true.
He's busy, you know, doing Watchmen and Leftovers, and like, he's only getting better. He's not going to go back to Lost.
That's a good point, actually. But they have so many things they could clear up. I mean, some of the people, again, spoiler alert, are still technically on that island.
Right.
There's a lot. I think there's a lot in there that I think a lot of people would be into in these streaming wars that are happening. But
I would be okay with a movie.
Listen, there is a conversation happening at Disney Plus. Right.
There has to be somewhere. Yeah, ABC, Disney Plus, wherever it is. But I was very invested in that finale. And like you, Dan, I really liked the finale. I thought the stakes were high, even if you weren't super like in love with the storyline. It was all coming to an end, and I had invested so many years of my life thinking about, you know, all the different things that could possibly happen with this show. So I loved Lost.
I think that kind of ends up being the problem with shows that really lend themselves to a good Reddit discourse.
For sure.
Is that nothing is going to live up to, like, what can live up to what you think could possibly happen.
Right, exactly.
Absolutely, 100%. And I've tried to, like, tamper my expectations from shows after Lost, but I don't know. I'm just insane, and I always expect the most craziest, ridiculous show to unfold, and then it never usually does.
I imagine later on in this conversation, we'll talk about another show that will have some similar themes, but we'll get to that when we get to that. What else almost made your list, but just was on the outside looking in, John?
So the second one that's on my almost list is actually Wheel of Fortune.
Ooh,
okay.
Yeah, game show. I threw you guys a little curveball here, I think, maybe with this one. The reason why is I can't tell you, and this is what I was kind of alluding to in the beginning of our talk here. That show was so impactful on my life as a child. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was like the letter board, if it was like the colorful wheel. I don't know if it was Vanna's gowns. I don't know what it was, but the whole like production of that show, even as a young child, I was so obsessed with Wheel of Fortune. And I remember like one of my, I think I was in like fifth or sixth grade, and all I wanted in life, okay, it was like Christmas was coming around. All I wanted was the Wheel of Fortune board game in my life. To play with whom? I have no idea, because who's playing Wheel of Fortune with a fucking fifth grader? So Wheel of Fortune, you know, and then as I got, by the way, I did want to be Vanna. I want to make this very clear. I wanted to be Vanna White. I wanted to have my own letter board. I wanted to turn and then touch, because remember, they upgraded that. Each one of those letters, there was just something like so addicting about being, I think, you know what it is? I think it was like being able to like touch a puzzle. I know it's that sounds super weird. I don't know
it had like a tactile element to it. That
listen, the Wheel of Fortune board game was amazing. I did
wasn't it amazing?
I would have played with you.
I eventually got it.
My brother and I loved playing that game.
Yes. Okay. Well, then I needed to come over to your house, Brandy, because I didn't have any friends.
And like turning those letters was really fun.
Yes. It was so fun. And just seeing how it's like, you know, evolved over the years, but not really. And I think that's what's been so interesting about that show and its success is like, it's the same show that has been around since I think it's debuted in the 70s or early 80s,
something like that. So you're still watching?
I watch from time to time. Listen, I'm not some like 80-year-old had my dinner at 3 o'clock, gonna sit down and watch my show, my stories, and my, you know, my Vanna White and Pat Sajak. But when it's on, I find myself getting sucked into it because I don't know, it's like almost like the nostalgia factor is still there. Yeah, I just love it. I love Wheel of Fortune, and hopefully one day I will be able to like be on the show. One of my my high school science teacher's husband was recently a contestant on the show, and I was like, oh my God, wait a minute, I'm an adult now. I could maybe be on the show.
This is a dream that can now be realized.
This is a dream that can be real, you guys. So I'm potentially going to apply to be on Wheel of Fortune.
Oh yeah, we got to get you on there. That's great.
Yeah, let's make it happen, Dan.
And you know what's funny is, so for those that don't know, John, we mentioned co-host a podcast, Shaken and Disturbed.
Yep.
His co-host, we also had on the show, one Darren Karp. And Darren added Jeopardy to her criteria. So I think it's funny that two sides of your podcast are kind of on the two sides of these iconic back-to-back game shows that are on every night.
7 and 7:30.
That's right. Yes. We would make such a great couple if we just weren't gay, you know, the two of us.
That's pretty incredible. Anything else that was close? Any other almost shows?
Those were kind of my two main almost shows. I mean, there were several other that, like, you know, had different meaning. The Oprah Winfrey show was kind of my next one on that list. Mm-hmm. Oprah was, to me, and we're going to talk about another kind of host, we'll get into that in a second, a hosted show, but, you know, as a young gay man, and I'll get into more of this too, because my list is extremely gay, you know, running home from school and getting in front of my TV to make sure I watch the Oprah Winfrey show from like fifth grade through like probably my senior of high school was not just a routine, but very much a lifestyle for me. And I was absolutely devastated when that show went off the air. I knew she was creating OWN. I knew it would be great. Anyway, it was just one of those things that I would run home to watch. And I just thought I had to mention it. And it really did impact me. Even her Favorite Things episodes, which of course had become a like pop culture, you know, iconic television.
Sure.
You know, those were actually very heartfelt moments. They were usually full of audience members who were teachers or a military. I know one year it was like Hurricane Katrina survivors. So love the Oprah Winfrey show. I really admire her as a female leader in this business. She's just incredible. So I couldn't go without mentioning her.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Oprah start Oxygen?
Where
you eventually ended up working?
Yeah. So I worked at Oxygen for 8 years from 2012 to 2020. And I was a social media person there. And I eventually moved into a producer role. And yeah, way back in the day, Oxygen was started by Oprah. But it's so funny you say that, Dan, because for the 8 years that I had worked there, it was a reality television network. It had morphed into a true crime network. You know, it had seen a couple different faces and hats over the years. But even in the last several months when I was working there, people still thought it was Oprah's network. And I'm like, that was literally 20 years ago or something insane. Like,
I completely forgot that.
Yeah, yeah.
But a little Oprah aside, my father-in-law is one of her preferred high-end interior painters.
Oh, so you're saying that he's going to introduce me and we're going to hit it off and we're going to be best friends?
I basically, he literally was at her. So he's done her house in Hawaii and her house in Santa Barbara. And he was at a dinner in Hawaii with Oprah and a few of the other guys that were working. And like, they were just having like Wagyu beef and like Oprah just like asking them like really deep questions, like getting their opinions.
That I love that.
But yeah. So I'm like one degree away from Oprah. She's seen pictures of my children.
Brandy, you and I just became best friends. I just want to make that very clear. I will say this. Oprah's one of, I think, two or three people that I don't get starstruck. I've worked in TV. I it's just part of life at this point.
Right.
I would openly weep and want her to hold me. She's one of three people that I would absolutely allow that to happen. And I should never be around for that reason.
Well, we need to know the other two now. Oprah and who are the other two?
Okay, fine. The other one is Serena Williams. I am her biggest fan, like absolute biggest fan.
She's amazing.
And then the other one is her sister, Venus Williams. Okay, listen, I love tennis. It's a family thing. Don't invite me to family dinner at the Williamses. I'll be a whole mess. So listen, you don't want to get me started on the Williams sisters. You will absolutely regret it.
That's here, another show.
I know we're on Zoom, but I'm showing Dan and Brandy my Venus Williams Funko Pop that's right next to my... I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
and
if there's an Oprah... You didn't need to get up to grab that, John. That was easily accessible.
That's a great point, Dan. It was literally an arm's length away. Anyway, back to television.
Well, so I think already we're getting definitely a picture of the sort of shows that influenced you, and I love it. So let's get to your TV BFF criteria. So as a quick refresher, we asked you to pick six shows in total with two shows in each of the three categories. Those categories are best, favorite, and forever. So your best shows are the ones that you think are the most artistic or well-executed or just overall the best made shows you've ever seen. Your favorite shows are the ones that hold a place near and dear to your heart and mean something to you personally. And the best way to describe the forever category is if you died tomorrow and in the afterlife, you got to choose two shows to watch in order from pilot to finale over and over and over for infinity. What are those shows?
And so for each category, we had you choose from the three overall genres of TV, which are comedy, drama, and unscripted. And unscripted is, you know, everything from reality shows to doc series to game shows, you know, unscripted. There have to be multiple episodes, so there's no one-offs allowed. But other than that, it can be anything. And there are no such things as guilty pleasures here. You know, we love TV. We're not here to TV shame. And the only other rule is that you can't double up on a genre in any category. So if you pick a comedy in your best category, your other pick has to be either unscripted or drama. So best, what are your two best shows?
Okay, the first one, this is going to be very controversial and people may turn off the podcast if they hear this. So the first best show for me is Glee. Now, let me just say, I don't know if either of you watched Glee.
I did.
I watched Glee.
I was a fan, yeah.
I went to see them at Radio City Music Hall.
Oh my God, I'm with my people. Okay, good. So let me just say, Glee is extremely controversial. Everyone loves to hate on Glee these days. I did a Glee podcast. It was the number one Glee podcast on iTunes. Thank you very much. Called Glee Chat. That's how big of a Gleek I was. for me, this show was just... Well, first of all, you can't deny that it was quote unquote revolutionary, right? They were turning out music, performances, and full episodic writing on a weekly basis. And even though it was however many episodes it was per season, it was like the amount of production that must have gone on with that show is insane. And I just respect that. That's what kind of landed it in my B of the BFF category, the best show. But Dan, you said that you were a big fan? Did you go to the concert like Brandy? Like, where were you in this spectrum?
I wasn't that big of a fan, but I do remember, you know, speaking to the revolutionary aspect of it that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I still remember watching that pilot. I watched it on Fox.com. I remember it was my old school, like Apple Mac desktop with like the rounded back or whatever
the hell it was.
The iMac.
Wow.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I remember watching it and finishing the episode and being like, that may have been the coolest. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. That was so cool. The Journey song, I had somewhat recently gone to see Journey at the Great New York State Fair. So the Don't Stop Believin' really hit. But yeah, the pilot I thought was, it hooked me. It hooked me big time. And then not even realizing that Ryan Murphy, the creator, I had actually the first show I ever binged on Netflix DVDs was Nip Tuck. So then to learn that, like, oh, this is a Ryan Murphy thing, that kind of introduced me to like the idea of the showrunner as something to like pay attention to.
Yeah.
So it was, I would say it was a bit of a formative show for me, because also I wasn't a big musical theater guy. So that kind of opened that door as well to those sorts of stories and shows.
I would say as far as pilots go, I mean, that is one of the most gripping, hit all of the things a pilot should do. They actually filmed the first 12 episodes, including the pilot, all in a bubble within like 3 weeks or something absolutely insane like that.
Oh my God. What?
Yeah. So, you know, once I started doing the podcast and just embedding myself in the Glee world, which, you know, not unlike Lost, it might have lost its way, so to speak, in certain, you know, certain seasons. And
once they're not in high school anymore, it lost me. That's when I stopped.
That's true. Much. That's kind of where
I was on board for like the first, definitely the first two seasons.
Yeah.
Maybe I went into season three. I don't remember.
And then you're like, to hell with this. Like, what is this? This is out of control. Yeah, exactly.
And then it was like, I'm going to go watch Vampire Diaries instead.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the joy that it gave me on a weekly basis. And like, remember, they were releasing the music on iTunes like every Tuesday. So like, that was something to look forward to. And, you know, listen, the music was hit or miss sometimes, but overall, it was like enjoyable music. And I think the Glee cast has some record on the Billboard charts. Like, they have more charting singles than like the Beatles. And, you know, they've had a lot of success there. So yeah, I love Glee.
So for you guys, I'm curious, who were your favorite cast members? Who was it like when their song started, you were like, yes, this is what I want. Yeah. This is what I need.
For me, it was Amber Riley.
She's just a force of nature. She's amazing. And she was very, very, very good from the very first episode. Mm-hmm. So she was not, you know, one of those slow burners, as they say. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, like you, Dan, I kind of love the journey stuff. So I love the group stuff.
Yeah.
Until they brought Darren Criss in, and only because Darren and I have a very similar tone and range, like as we sing. So like all of his songs, I could sing super easily, like in the shower and around the house and in my car. So that was just really fun. And like, usually they were giving him like the best songs because he really hit that character. Blaine was huge on the show, and they kept him on as a recurring or actually as a main cast member after he first appeared.
That's right, he transferred.
Yeah, I was a full-blown Gleek, and I just thought, you know, to your point about this particular category about shows that do things well artistically, you know, Glee was at the top when it was out. It was like pop culture zeitgeist. It was one of the biggest moments in the back then, so I loved it.
Mm-hmm. It was funny because for me, at least, and I think for a lot of people of our generation, it was the first time that we had seen like musical television.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
But it did remind me of one thing. So I studied TV like in school, in college, and we took this class, the history of primetime TV. And our professor showed us what I think is actually the first case of a musical TV show. Are you guys familiar with Cop Rock?
Yes.
Cop Rock? No.
Cop Rock. It was basically like picture NYPD Blue meets Glee. It's exactly that was the pitch.
What?
And it was from Stephen Bochco, the guy who made like Hill Street Blues and all these like, you know, hugely important and influential shows. And he was like, you know what? You know what's gonna make this better? The cops should sing.
Yeah, the cops need to have musical numbers.
Oh my God, I'm gonna start a new podcast for that, obviously. That's amazing.
It was wild.
Before we move on, the last thing I do want to say about it, which was very important about Glee, you know, the Blaine and Kurt storyline and then the Brittany and Santana storyline, that was so hugely important in primetime television to see young, well, they weren't high schoolers, but they were adults playing high schoolers. Right. Seeing that representation in 2009, 2010, when the show was airing, was so important to the gay community. And eventually they brought in Alex Newell, who actually was one of the winners of the Glee Project.
Right.
I mean, the representation back then, I mean, we're still trying to get more trans people on television now in 2021. And they were doing that 10 years ago. And they were kind of the first to really, you know, step into that role and really own it, you know, as a television show. So aside from the artistic expressions that were happening through the show and through the music, they were really doing a lot of good for children and, you know, just anybody who watches television.
Yeah. No, I think for all those reasons, this is a great pick as your first best show. What's your second best show?
Okay. So, Dan, this is where you and I are going to have some fun because I know we've talked about this. I know it just aired, but WandaVision has taken a place on the very top of my list of favorite television shows. And one of the things I wanted to discuss with both of you is this a television show? Because we're really starting to enter a place in media and entertainment where it's almost like there's a lot of like blending. Like, should Elizabeth Olsen win an Emmy for this? Because she's done a lot of her work in the movies, you know,
I think it's definitely a show. Before we dig into it though, I think we need to a quick rule check here. Yeah. Are these two dramas in your best category?
No, because Glee is technically a comedy.
Okay.
I think it's labeled as a comedy.
Well, what's important is how it's labeled in your mind, right? Like, if you're arguing that Glee is a comedy pick,
yeah,
I think that tracks. It was a funny show for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think, Brandy? Is it comedy as a fan?
I would agree. It's comedy with a little bit of heart. So comedy that you could have some tears.
Yeah. So in your face, Dan, Brandy and I veto whatever you're trying to do right now. Just joking.
I think you're right. Like, you know, I think that, you know, it was an hour long show, so may have described itself as a drama as far as like Emmy contention and stuff.
Yeah, but that's true.
It's also in the eye of the viewer, right? Like, I use the example of Shameless all the time, right? Like, that's billed as a drama, but it's a funny show, and you could convince me that it would be a comedy. All right, so that's cleared up.
Yeah,
great.
Okay, good.
Glee's a comedy. WandaVision is definitely a drama, and I think it's definitely a drama television series for sure. And I think Elizabeth Olsen should be up for an Emmy. Her work on that show was absolutely incredible.
Right.
And this is where we're gonna nerd out a little bit, Brandy. Because
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and just like let you guys know two things up front.
Okay.
One.
Okay.
I don't know anything about Marvel.
Oh no, Brandy, we were doing so well, the two of us.
Two, I haven't watched WandaVision, but that's you saying that you like that it's like super bingeable, it's like the 9 episodes, makes me more interested in maybe seeing it. Like, I don't know if I would have enjoyed it so much week to week, especially like not being as invested in that world. So I'm not really picking up on a lot of the things.
Right.
Let me tell you, it was torture to wait for those new episodes. Like, as a huge Marvel, I mean, I am a huge, do you want me to reach for my other Funkos? They're all Marvel sitting right next to me. You don't want me to do that. You know, it was torture to like wait for this stuff. Cause you know, previously it was like a movie. So you could go to the movie, learn about it, and then speculate until the next movie. And you know, much like Lost, which is what I was talking about at the top of the show, it was like, Dan, I mean, how many times did you and I talk about the show in between episodes? And
oh,
like,
yeah,
you
were... it was absolutely monoculture. It was absolutely, you know, you had to watch that day. And I mean, it was tricky because episodes came out at midnight West Coast time, 3 a.m. East Coast time in the middle of the night on Fridays.
Don't I know it?
John would stay up and watch those.
Would I? Let's not confirm or deny that, but maybe I did. Yeah.
But you couldn't go on Twitter. You had to be careful on Instagram. Like all of the websites that I frequent to get my TV news, like this show for me, specifically in talking about it as a TV show is, you know, this is Marvel's first foray into series on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And the show itself is kind of an homage to classic TV, right? So Brandy, you haven't watched yet, but and this isn't a spoiler, but episodes are kind of framed as classic sitcoms and it starts in the 50s, and with each episode you're kind of getting more and more current. So you have like, you know, the kind of like an I Love Lucy homage, and then an All in the Family homage, and then a Family Matters or a, you know, Full House, and then there's a Malcolm in the Middle thing. So like, it reminds you of classic TV growing up in a lot of ways. It was really cool. And from the jump, like, they don't added a lot of like the Marvel-y, superhero-y, MCU type stuff until like they've been able to hook you with this kind of sitcom premise. And then it starts to feel a bit more Marvel-y from there. But they do a really great job of blending like, oh yeah, this does feel like a Marvel movie, but it also feels like a TV show in a really cool way.
Yeah. And not only that, there's a whole narrative reason why we're seeing it in that format, which is another layer of how cool the show is. You know, I don't want to spoil it, obviously, especially Brandy, if you're interested in watching it, but that is what I wanted to touch on, and which is why it kind of landed in my best shows, is because the artistic format of what they did with the show, how they tied in all these characters and all the existing Marvel universe. And not only that, but like made it a show that could stand on its own. So like the Brandys of the world could go watch it. And
yeah,
and I think you'll enjoy it, Brandy, if you like television. It's a great drama, I guess you could say, sci-fi drama. That's where it was just, there were so many pieces of WandaVision that just came together in a perfect way. And I think for Marvel fans who didn't get any new content in 2020 for various reasons, to jump into the Disney Plus world with WandaVision was just a home run, in my opinion.
Yeah, I loved it. Coming back to our Lost discussion a little bit earlier, you know, this was definitely a show that had tons of theorizing, right? Like every little thing, every Easter egg. There's Marvel Comics canon. There's how is this tying to the movies? It's
into the X-Men.
Yeah, even. Bringing in X-Men, bringing in, you know, Fantastic Four and all the new properties that, that Marvel.
Is it going to go on for, is it just this one season, or will it go on for season two, or did they have to stick the landing in the last episode?
They had to stick the landing. I think it's,
yeah, that's
it's billed as a limited series and for awards and stuff.
Okay.
But it connects into Doctor Strange 2, which just finished filming. So they don't say that in the show, but just know that that's where it's going.
And Kevin Feige has set that up too. And I think that was actually something that was at the core of a lot of the speculation and theorizing was, turns out at the, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but, you know, Kevin Feige kind of billed it as like, this will be a, you know, a Wanda origin story that leads into Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. And everyone like kind of twisted themselves into knots thinking that like, yes, and but what else? But like at the end of the day, like that's exactly what it was. It was really well done, but that's exactly what it freaking was. Like they got us hook, line, and sinker. Like we're all now, if you watch WandaVision and liked it, you're absolutely going to want to see what happens next with this character, these characters, and you're going to watch that damn movie, you know?
And not, you know, I know we touched on this a second ago, but we cannot go another moment without saying Elizabeth Olsen and her depth and her acting. I remember, Dan, in the first couple episodes, I remember talking to you and I was like, I'm not sure about her acting. It's not really hitting for me. But by the end of the, By the end of the season, I realize now the progression of, and I'm not giving anything away here, but of the sadness that she has to go through. I realize now that like that was all part of her character. And Elizabeth Olsen just, I have a whole new respect for her, and I want to seek out her other work now because I thought she did such an amazing job. And, you know, it's so funny. It's like a sci-fi show about witches and whatever else you can think of, but it's so... This is what I think Marvel does so well, is they marry this sci-fi comic book characters with really rich storylines that are just, you know, mesmerizing. I think that's why Marvel is such a huge success.
Yeah. And I think it really did feel like a show for the moment, which, you know, a little backstory, this wasn't supposed to be the first Disney Plus show. That was actually supposed to be Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But at the heart of the show, again, not spoiling anything, but If you've watched the movies, you understand that the Wanda character had just gone through a pretty traumatic loss. And I think that, and that was a theme in the show, is kind of like how she's dealing with that loss. Mm-hmm. And for a show that came out in the middle of a pandemic, I think that really resonated with people even more so than it would have if it had come out as the second show and like as it was it was planned to. I think it really kind of, not only was it a really cool way to like Marvel dipping its toe into TV with an homage to TV, also just thematically, it really, really stuck and hit a lot of people. I know it hit me that way for sure.
I mean, look, you guys have sold me.
There you go.
I'm watching.
We did it.
I'm sold.
See you next time. I want to come back and talk about it with you, Brandy.
Yeah. And I have been specifically like avoiding articles and stuff about it, because I'm like, if I decide to watch it, like I want to like,
yes,
be able to, you know, but luckily like my like internet circles don't really run
haven't
run there.
You're getting it on your For You page on TikTok. That's good
Two great picks, John, in your best category. So moving on to your favorite shows, in the second category here, what is your first favorite show pick?
Okay, so my first, you know, both of these have have different significance, and they are sort of the nostalgia factor that I was talking about earlier with like Wheel of Fortune. But my first favorite show is Will and Grace. It is I could tell you everything that happened on that show. And, you know, as a high school gay guy who was sort of like learning what it means to be gay and like figuring things out for himself. And the show is so fun and exciting, and it's like hilarious and silly. And then you see this Will Truman character who is, you know, maybe, listen, this could be debated, but maybe the first sort of openly gay main character on primetime television who isn't just, you know, this like stereotype. And, you know, Jack has his own thing. Jack could be a stereotype, but he actually plays into the show and is Will's best friend. And there's all these reasons it's not just a stereotype. But
sure.
Will Truman was a successful lawyer in New York City. You know, for me, I had big aspirations to, you know, do something really exciting and get out of my small town in high school. I went to New York City in eighth grade. It was like a whole new world to me. I didn't even know cities existed in eighth grade like that. you know, I'm from this small town in the mountains of Maryland. So it was, for me, watching, you know, the show Will and Grace and seeing Will Truman live this successful, happy, fun life and date guys and live like with his best friend in New York City. There are so many gay men that Will Truman was such a person, I think, in the back of my head, who I aspired to be or to replicate a life like his, that are my age. I think so many men that have a similar story like that. So Will and Grace is my favorite show for that reason, because it does have the heart in it for me as well. But it's just such a funny show. I mean, almost every line of that show, you're just sitting there with a smile on your face because you just know something's going to happen. Jack's going to bust through the door. Karen's going to have a great one-liner. Grace is going to be a complete mess. And then you got Beverly Leslie, who's just out of control. Yeah, so for me, Will and Grace had to be one of my favorites. It was a clear favorite for me.
I love that as a pick for you.
It's just a feel-good show.
It is a feel-good show. And I'm wondering, so it seems like you definitely connected with the Will character.
Yeah.
When you think about that show, is there like a specific moment or scene or episode that your mind goes to first?
In one of the later seasons, Will dates a cop. And it's so interesting because, again, there's so many stereotypes about gay people in television. Oh, you know, even in the 90s, it was like, you know, they're all dying of HIV and all these like terrible things. But on television was this funny show where Will, this funny, handsome guy, gets to date a cop, which in and of itself is somewhat masculine and tough, played by Bobby Cannavale, who is a dreamboat, by the way. So I was like, where's my cop in New York City? Nowadays, I don't know if I want to be dating a cop in New York City for a whole other reason. But, you know, just that whole arc, though, you know, with Will dating him. And I think eventually they broke up and seeing his heartache. This was all in my most formative years as I sort of became or come into my own in the sense of realizing what it means to be a gay man, you know. So just that whole storyline with his boyfriend was really, you know, impactful to me. It made me realize how normal this can be. It's not taboo. Just because no one in my life is talking about it doesn't mean it's not out there waiting for me.
Love that.
By the way, very bad relationship history. So I didn't learn much, but it's exciting to look up to Will Truman, if nothing else.
Anecdotal story, my daughter told Bobby Cannavale that he couldn't sit with us.
Oh my God.
Where, when, how, what is this?
Yeah.
Brooklyn Children Museum. We were, obviously this is pre-COVID. She and I were sitting in like the dining area or whatever. And this family comes and sits down next to us. And Yuli goes, "That's ours. It's our seat." And I'm looking at the woman. I was like, why does she look so familiar to me? Like, do I know her? And I was like, oh, don't look too long. Cause if I know her, I don't want to be like, I don't remember your name.
Right.
And then I realized, oh my God, it's Rose Byrne.
Is he married to Rose Byrne? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he's married to Rose Byrne. And then he sat down and he was like, that's our seat. And I was like, it's fine. You guys can sit there.
Did that spark conversation or were they just like, okay.
We both, Rose Byrne and I, looked at each other and we were just like, kids today, right?
I had no idea they were together. That kind of like is interesting to me because I love Rose Byrne as well.
Same. That's a good looking couple.
Definitely.
But yeah, that was not just, you know, anecdotal story.
I like it. But yeah, Will and Grace. Yeah.
Awesome.
Will and Grace, great pick. What is your second favorite show, John Thrasher?
Okay, so my second favorite show, The Rosie O'Donnell Show, was my second favorite show.
Rosie, wow.
Rosie, wow. The Rosie O'Donnell Show. And, you know, I didn't want to give you any spoilers in the beginning when I was talking about the Oprah Show, but I would run home. 3 o'clock was the Rosie O'Donnell Show and 4 o'clock was the Oprah Show. So I was booked, hashtag booked, in front of my television, being influenced by, you know, the Rosie O'Donnells of the world. And that show was just, I mean, you guys probably remember the Rosie O'Donnell Show. How
yeah,
could you
know? I still, mean, still, she used to flip the
koosh balls.
The koosh balls,
yes,
that's right. Yeah.
Absolutely. And she was on top of the world. I mean, if you saw the ratings on that show, my God, it was like out of control. And then she just walked away from it. I was going to say one of the other people that I would maybe openly weep, you know, with as they hold me is Rosie O'Donnell, because aside from the show, I just love her so much and like who she is, what she stands for. Her contributions to Broadway, I think, are really just unbelievable. She's just such a good person overall. Would I weep? I don't know, because at this point, I'm just hoping I'll get to meet her at some point and I just need to like focus. There might be an actual, you know, there's the Rosie O'Donnell, then there's Oprah. And I'm like, I probably won't meet Oprah, although Brandy's clearly best friends with Oprah. So maybe there's a chance.
Who knows? So John, you were talking about Oprah earlier. What is it about Rosie that put her in that show on the criteria while Oprah's on the outside looking in?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, again, it just goes back to the feel-good nature of that show. You know, she had everything from a young Britney Spears to, you know, she would bring on literal Broadway productions to perform. I mean, it was the variety show of my childhood. You know, so many people, I later learned like the Johnny Carson Show and different, even game shows had certain elements that Rosie brought to it. But she was so aware of that too. Just knowing her and her respect and obsession with television from her own childhood, she was bringing all of that to life in the Rosie O'Donnell feel good brand at the time. And it was just so much fun. It was just a fun thing to run home and make sure you watched. And whether it was at your house or you went to your friend's house, it was like the Rosie O'Donnell Show just would make you laugh and feel good about life. And it was so influential.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a party. I remember it just had like a really fun, like just kind of hangout vibe where Oprah always had an air of like seriousness to her, I think.
Yes, yes.
Well, and Oprah was all like, Rosie, I felt like was more, there was just like more random celebs, fun music things going on. It was just more fun. And like Oprah, like you could cry because like she's talking to somebody whose mom just got murdered. Like,
totally.
you know,
yes.
But like, you didn't have to worry about that with Rosie. It's like, you want to be in the audience of Rosie, like cheering it up. It's like, I feel like Ellen has pulled a lot from her.
Yeah,
oh,
that's a great point.
Absolutely, Brandy.
Like, Ellen basically came in and was like, guess what? I'm just going to rip Rosie O'Donnell off.
Rosie was doing all of that stuff too, giving things away, bringing in people, giving away scholarships. Not to put anything off of Ellen, but Rosie just felt like she was really, truly meaningful in what she was doing with changing people's lives.
Well, Rosie was able to come at a time where everything wasn't dependent on clicks. I feel like Ellen, you need to immediately transfer it to Ellen Tube so that we can see how many, you know, views we can get on.
So true. Yes. No, you know? So true. And as somebody who has worked in the digital end of television, I can tell you that is 100% true.
This is inspiring because I was going to ask, what are some of the more iconic moments on the Rosie Show? But I think a better way to phrase it based on how we're talking about is if there were the internet like we have it now and you know, all the social media and YouTube, what are the moments that stand out for you that would have gone viral from Rosie if viral was a thing when she was on?
You know, one of the ones that comes to mind isn't necessarily a feel-good moment, but I think she had, I believe it was Tom Selleck, one of these guys who's like really big on the NRA, came on her show and she had a back and forth with him about sort of gun rights. And, you know, the Rosie O'Donnell Show was on during Columbine and she talks openly about how Columbine for her was one of the most devastating moments in her life.
And it was Tom. I just looked it up. It was Tom Selleck.
Tom Selleck, okay.
Who was not just an NRA supporter. He was on like the board of directors until 2018.
That's right.
There's something changed in our culture. That's not a simple.
But you can't say that guns don't bear a responsibility. If the mic is of the Tech 9 assault rifle, this is the gun that those boys brought into the school. Why the NRA wouldn't say, as a matter of compromise, we agree, assault rifles are not good.
I can't speak for the NRA.
But you're their spokesperson, Tom, so you have to be responsible for what they say.
I'm not a spokesperson.
But if you put your name out and say, I, Tom Selleck.
Don't put words in my mouth. I'm not a spokesperson. Remember how Tom said, you know, this is a nice one-sided conversation, but you keep interrupting me. Remember how civil you said we were going to be?
I let you talk for 4 minutes without saying one thing. Okay. I did. I didn't say one thing.
That moment is one of those things that you would see on Twitter or, as Brandy said, on EllenTube or whatever right away, because she went toe to toe to him. She was the queen of nice. That was what she was billed at the time. So for her to go, you know, toe to toe with a big, huge activist on the NRA was a pretty big deal for that time slot. But that's the thing about Rosie, is she is so talented that she could create those moments every single episode if she really wanted to. And looking back at her now as somebody who hosts a podcast, many different podcasts, and who has done hosting gigs on television and interviewed a lot of really interesting people, she is like on her game. She knew how to interview somebody, but keep the mood so, so fun, comedic. And she was so good at these transitions in and out of commercial breaks. You just felt she was in command of this really fun one-hour television show. And I respect that. And I love her for that.
That's a fun pick. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're liking my pick.
Yeah. So that brings us to the final category, forever shows. What's the first show that you're taking with you to the afterlife?
So my first forever show is, you know, because this is the one where you said, you know, would play on a loop for the rest of your life or something like that.
Yeah.
The one I had to pick is Saturday Night Live, because listen, it's on its like 49,000th season or something like that. You know, it's still around.
It's a great forever pick.
Excellent pick.
Thank you very much. I'm never going to run out of funny sketches. I will never get bored of anything. You know, Saturday Night Live is another one of those shows. I remember being very, very young and staying up super late with my mom and watching Molly Shannon, Catherine Gallagher do round off back handsprings into walls and laughing hysterically. I mean, those are some of my favorite memories. It's like staying up late and watching the show with my mom. And then, you know, as I became, you know, late middle school and all through high school, Saturday Night Live was, I think my personality is what it is because of Saturday Night Live. Those characters, those actors, those comedians in the 90s in particular, I mean, everyone says, oh, Saturday Night Live isn't what it used to be. I mean, they've said that for
decades.
They've
said that from the beginning.
They say every season they say that.
Exactly. But the 90s cast, you know, starting with, I would say like the Adam Sandler through, I want to say the Kristen Wiig era.
Sure.
Is just chock full of the funniest people you've ever seen. And that was when I was sort of, you know, forming my, I guess you could say, my sense of humor, my personality, whatever. But, you know, Saturday Night Live is my friend circle. Like, we would get together on Saturday nights in someone's basement and watch Saturday Night Live and then just make each other laugh with the stupid characters however way we could, like reenacting them. So, you know, for me, with so many years of the show and how much I love it, there's some drama with the casting and who's staying and who's not.
Sure.
You know, there's kind of like what happens outside of Saturday Night Live, and all of that just comes up to be one of those forever shows that I will always love and I hope never, ever goes off the air.
Oh, I don't think it will.
I don't think it will either.
SNL is... Brandy and I have talked about this, like, you're watching it from beginning to end. So it's kind of like you get to be reminded of what was going on on Earth and what is still going on, right? Because like by the time you get to the end of the loop, you go back to the beginning and then you end up banking all the episodes that are airing while you're rewatching it again. So every time you watch, you're going to get a new batch of episodes at the end.
Yeah.
What an incredible gift, right? Like
every episode is an amazing snapshot of life at that moment.
For better or worse, by the way, because there's a lot of sketches from, you know, the 70s in particular, where you're like, they better not air that one, you know, in 2020.
Right. But, you know, if you don't like something, wait 4 minutes and then it's over. Right. So it's
exactly
for that reason. It's a great forever pick as well.
I'll say this too, you know, I recently went through my DVD collection that people our age have. The only DVDs that I kept were a handful of other ones, but I kept all of my best of Saturday Night Live DVDs, sure. like Best of Sherry O'Terry, Best of Tracy Morgan,
Best of Will Ferrell, Volumes 1 and 2.
Exactly, which I do think I have those, yes. Those DVDs, those physical things, were so important to me because anytime I was having a bad day or just wanted to laugh, or, you know, I will tell you this, Sherry O'Terry is one of the most underrated comedic geniuses of that show, and her Best of DVD I have memorized from start to finish, and I could do it right now, and I haven't watched it in probably 15 years. But yeah, those were the only ones I couldn't imagine myself getting rid of, just because as a teenager, they were so important to me. I would pack my book bag full of them and go to my friends' houses, and we would watch them all night and eat pizza.
Oh, Sleepover Gold. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Those DVDs were Sleepover Gold. I, too, still have a fairly extensive DVD collection. They're just so rewatchable, a lot of those best ofs. I have the first season fully, that you can get that on DVD.
Oh, nice.
And I also have, I don't know if you ever saw these, and I forget when they aired or where they aired, but they're on DVD. There were these, like, I think they were made maybe 10-ish years ago or so. But SNL, the first 5 years, there's a documentary.
Yes.
SNL in the 80s, there's a documentary. SNL in the 90s, there's a documentary. SNL in the 2000s, I think they played on like E or something.
Yeah.
But those, holy shit, those things are the coolest. If you could find those, seek them out. Because it's like, it's the story of the show and how casting came together and behind the scenes moments.
Yeah.
But also it's just an incredible, it's just an incredible like highlight reel. Like you also get to see all of the best sketches from those years. So highly recommend that. Do you have a favorite sketch or two or three that you think of first? What are they?
The one that I keep going back to is, do you remember when Sherry O'Terry and Will Ferrell played these morning talk show hosts on a sketch called Morning Latte?
I don't.
Okay, Britney Spears was a guest. I'm just laughing at this because I know every word to every one of the sketches, and it's like very sad. Do you remember Napster and LimeWire back in the day?
Yes.
People were downloading music. I was downloading the audio from these sketches and burning them onto CDs and walking to school. And I was obsessed with learning these sketches because they were so funny to me. And I think as a young impressionable person, you kind of want to be like funny. And I thought if I could sort of reenact these funny moments or these scenes, I don't know. I'm just saying, I was completely obsessed with Morning Latte in particular.
Good morning. Grab a cup and get ready to fill it with Morning Latte.
Good morning, I'm Tom Wilkins.
And I'm Cass Van Rye. We are already having fun this morning.
A lot of fun.
Okay, our producer, Ted Durgan, bought a CD over the
weekend. And wait, he thought it was a jazz CD.
But it wasn't. It was hard rock. How funny is that?
How funny is that?
And I will say this too, Sherry O'Terry, I am who I am today because of Sherry O'Terry. I'm not exaggerating. That sounds ridiculous. I'm a 35-year-old white man from the mountains. Like, what am I talking about? But it's really true. And so Saturday Night Live, Morning Latte is just one of those things. And I will say one more thing about it, which is that having worked at Oxygen, I actually got to work in 30 Rock, the building where they film Saturday Night Live. And I have so many different weird stories. I mean, I've been in the elevators with all the cast members. I have small panic attacks because I really admire them and I'm trying to stay professional. But, you know, every once in a while, I might have, you know, found my way down to the ninth floor and heard some sound checks of Justin Bieber or Harry Styles or some of the rehearsals that were going on. But I'll never forget one year we had a company-wide meeting on the floor of the set.
In 8H. Sure.
In 8H. The entire time I was there, I was like, where did the morning latte sketch go? Because that's what I'm really obsessed with.
So the eighth floor where SNL, the studio is 8H.
Yep.
Down the hall from that is Studio 8G, where the Rosie O'Donnell show used to take place. So like that.
Yes. Yes. I know that.
That 30-foot stretch is like.
It's your heaven.
Don't even get me started.
Your Mecca, you know. SNL, that is a great forever pick. One that I thought about myself for my own criteria, if we're being honest. What is your second forever pick, John?
All right, my second forever pick is Thank You for Being a Friend. For those who can't see, I'm showing Dan and Brandy my Golden Girls blanket that I just had within reaching distance as well with all my other things here at my desk. But Golden Girls is, in a different way than Will and Grace, you know, a sitcom that I know I will just, there's never a dull moment. Not that there ever is in Will and Grace, but Golden Girls is just the ultimate feel-good show to me. Much like Will and Grace, there's not a moment that goes by that's not hilarious. And, you know, it has a lot of teaching moments in it as well, especially in the later seasons. They really started hitting on topical issues, like social issues that were happening at the time, HIV. I know Rose had a roommate who was a lesbian from college who came to visit her and had a crush on her. You know, those were things in the 80s and early 90s that weren't super talked about, especially in primetime television. But yeah, I mean, listen, who doesn't love the Golden Girls? It's just the best show. It's one of those things that, you know, what's funny about Golden Girls that's different from Will and Grace for me is that I never watched Golden Girls from start to finish. It was always like, if it's on, I watch it all the time. And I have this routine that I talk about on my podcast, Shaken and Disturbed, where, you know, every night at 10 o'clock, it's Judge Judy from 10 to 11, because I have to get my Judge Judy in. And Golden Girls on the Hallmark Channel from 11 to 12. And that's my routine to wind down for the night. And so in a way, it sort of has been my forever show, because that routine is something I've had. By the way, what a juxtaposition from like Judge Judy to the Golden Girls.
Yeah, I'm really, I was going to say, Judge Judy didn't come up in an almost show, but it feels like she may have.
I should have maybe included her, because I do love me some Judge Judy at night.
Now,
but
now, John, I think we might have a problem here.
Oh, no. What?
Because it looks as if you've chosen two comedies in your forever category.
Oh, no. Am I fired? Should I go to bed like I just said I should do?
I was thinking that, but then I was like, well, SNL is a variety show.
Thank you.
Does that, like, so how does that fit into our category?
Well, that's, because that's the thing. I think, because in favorite shows, Will and Grace, clearly a comedy. Rosie O'Donnell show, I feel comfortable calling it unscripted, because you're not scripting like the interviews. There are scripted elements.
That's true.
But for that show, I would feel comfortable calling it unscripted. SNL, though, I mean, that's a fully scripted show. That is scripted from start to finish.
Listen, here's the thing about me that you guys are just going to have to deal with. My forever shows are always going to be comedies. I am not going to get stuck in some lost hellscape where I'm just dissecting shows on a loop through eternity. So you're just going to have to take it for what it's worth. I'm sorry to tell you.
I mean, unless the one thing that I think maybe, let me pitch this. Would you
go ahead.
Feel comfortable putting Glee as a forever show in place of one of these two? Because then you could recategorize Glee as your drama in the forever category. And I'll tell you what, and maybe this makes it a little bit easier, because there is one little wrinkle that we haven't brought up. Yeah, so
there's a twist.
Yeah, oh God, Brandy, lay up the twist.
Oh God, I'm nervous.
Okay, if you get to choose one of these forever picks that you get to watch every single time, like it's the first time, which would it be?
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
And does that change the game, right? Like, so...
Does that change it with Glee?
Right. So if you could put Glee in forever, knowing that every time you watch it, it's like watching it for the first time, does that change the calculus?
I see what you're saying. Are you asking, though, if I want to deal with Lea Michele on a loop for the rest of my life and eternity? Because that's going to change some things. As great as she is, that character is a lot. Oh God, do I want to put Glee in my forever show? I don't think I can do it. I love Glee. It really is tormenting me. I love Glee, but like, I just really can't imagine that afterlife of dealing with that show on a loop. Is there another rule that I can bend, you guys, that you'll accept SNL and Golden Girls? By the way, I have a blanket. Did we talk about this? I have a blanket with their faces on it. What more do you want from me on this show?
I think the only other suggestion I could make, would you consider putting Rosie in the forever category as unscripted?
Okay.
And hold moving on. Either Golden, because Golden Girls sounds like it could very well be a favorite show.
You're right. That's what we're going to do. We're moving Rosie O'Donnell to forever show. I don't have a Rosie O'Donnell blanket, but I can't believe I'm doing this. Yes, let's do that so that I don't break any of Dan's very intense rules. Brandy was all about this, by the way. I just want to make that very clear. Dan is laying down the hammer on
Brandy's
the show today.
Brandy's good cop. Dan's bad cop.
Exactly.
Listen, if you can't play by the rules, you know, that's the crux of the whole show. It's this criteria.
Well, I'm glad we could figure this out together as a family, the three of us.
I feel much better. So now the question comes back to, between SNL and Rosie, what show are you going to watch like it's the first time every time?
Ooh, that's so tough. Are you saying like the first time, like going back to how I felt when I watched it the first time?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, as soon as you finish watching it's Men in Black memory wipe, and it's like you've never seen it ever.
Yeah.
So when you watch it again, it's new. It's like you're discovering it again.
I think for this, I'm going to go with the Rosie show because
fun.
Yeah. I mean, listen, SNL has its special place like that, but it's just feel good from the very start with Rosie. And I really appreciate that. And if you couldn't tell, I like to feel good and laugh. That's where all these comedy shows are. I'm bending the rules in every which way I can do it. So, you know, Rosie, like I said, was just such a fun show. And I think that's the one that I'm sure, like, I wish I could go back and like experience myself watching it for the first time as a young kid, because I know I was just probably like so excited and addicted to it from the very beginning. That's just the type of show it is. So I'm going to go with the Rosie show. Yeah.
I love it.
Great.
John, what an incredible list we have here. So to recap, this is great. This is a great list. And I think definitely says a lot about you and who you are and what you like and what makes you happy. And I think it's great. So to recap,
thank you.
Glee and WandaVision are the best shows that John Thrasher has ever seen. Will and Grace and the Golden Girls are your favorite shows of all time.
Yep.
And John would watch Saturday Night Live and the Rosie O'Donnell show forever. That hallowed hallway, getting a lot of love in your forever shows.
I know, right?
I love it.
Yes. You know what? I, as you read that back, I felt very confident in those choices.
Felt good?
Other than Glee. Let me think. I should have rethought that a little bit harder, but it is what it is. I think it, for what it's worth, it's great. Yeah. So I'm very confident in my picks. It was a tough one, but it was fun to do.
Well, it's a great list.
Thank you. I really appreciate that you would let me bend the rules a touch with those.
Yeah. No, I think we made it work. I think,
all right.
Yeah, I think that works. Hey friends, popping in here real quick because as you might have noticed, it actually does not work. And there is now another slight issue with John's BFF criteria.
Right. So we now have two comedies in John's favorite category with Will and Grace alongside the Golden Girls. And we did not catch that in the moment. So just this one time, we're going to have to let this slide, but we promise it won't happen again. Okay, back to the episode.
So, John, before we sign off, we have one more thing that we do to end the show. We have a quick 3-question lightning round.
Yes, I love any lightning rounds, no matter what they are. Yes.
So, John, so with these, this is the opposite approach of the criteria. So don't overthink it. First thing that pops into your head is what you're going to go with. Are you ready?
Okay, yes.
What is a book or movie that should be adapted into a TV series?
Bossy Pants by Tina Fey. It is one of the funniest books I've ever read. Also, most talkative, I believe, is Amy. Is that Amy Poehler's book? Amy Poehler's book I read as well.
Amy Poehler's book is Yes, Please.
Yes, Please.
I think most talkative was Andy Cohen's.
Andy Cohen's. What am I doing? Yes, Please. Both Tina and Amy's are such funny books that I could totally see them becoming television series for sure.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Both of those books are incredible. Yes, Please. Yeah. Actually, I just recently picked back up off the shelf to open up again. I love that book so much. Great picks. Next question. What is a canceled show, not on your criteria, that you would revive tomorrow if you could?
Geez, this is a tough one. So Reno 911 was one of my other favorite shows for a long time. And they just redid something on Quibi where I literally signed up for Quibi to watch it. And then Quibi disappeared and was like canceled. So I don't know what happened on Quibi or Reno 911. But, you know, Reno 911 is one of those shows that I feel like tweak it the right way and give it the right platform, and it could be a big hit. And all of those comedians and actors on that show went on to do some other fun things and even maybe some better things, especially like Niecy Nash. She has a pretty nice career at this point. Sure. I would just love to see what they're up to now in a post Quibi world, because I still don't know what happened. That app just came and went within a couple months. So
Oh boy, what a flash in the pan.
Yeah, exactly.
911. That's great. And I think
Yeah. Does it count? I know you're the bad cop. Does it count even though it was rebooted?
Yeah, well, it counts.
Okay.
Because it technically was canceled again.
That's right. Yeah. Canceled twice.
Canceled twice.
That's sad. Yeah.
Okay. And then last question, we're going to spill some tea. What is one show that everybody raves about that you've never gotten into or can't stand?
Oh, good question. And I have a really good answer for this. To me, it was Game of Thrones, which I know is a critically acclaimed masterpiece, but
mostly.
And yeah, right. Exactly. Except for that last season, apparently. I never watched it. But for me, it was like, I kind of missed that bandwagon when it happened.
Sure.
And when I started to get into it, it felt a little too like I was trying to be part of it. And I was just like, I can't force myself to like it. Let me tell you, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. I love Marvel. That kind of universe is right up my alley. But for whatever reason, I just never quite got into it. Can I give you a part two? Because I just thought of another one.
Yeah.
Another one that I know everyone is going to kill me for is Schitt's Creek.
Whoa.
I know this is Brandy is shook right now in the Zoom. I know. I get it. I'm sure it's so funny.
It's so good.
Amazing. For whatever reason, when I started this show, I watched the first four episodes and I don't know what happened. I didn't find it as funny as everyone was. So I don't know if maybe everyone else had hyped me up to a point where I had no return, so to speak. I just never could get into it. I might go back to it since you both just looked at me like you were going to jump through this Zoom and like punch me in the face or something. But yeah, so those two shows, I guess, are kind of.
Yeah, I would implore you to check out Schitt's Creek before Game of Thrones. I think it's absolutely right up your alley. And I have heard that feedback before. Like, it was tough to get into the first couple episodes.
It was. I found it tough to get into.
Okay, so then maybe.
I feel like once you. It's like, I feel like it takes a few episodes to just like really understand the characters.
That's exactly.
And once you're on board with who they are, it's like, okay.
Right. Because they present is very unlikable. And
exactly.
You got to realize that you got to get to a point where you form. It's funny. It reminds me of something that Mike Schur has said, and I've repeated often about comedy. He's like, I don't care what it is. Every comedy, throw out the first six episodes. Because we haven't figured it out yet. We don't know exactly who the characters are. Mm. We don't know their dynamics. Every comedy that's premiered, like, take those first six with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
And then it really starts to find its
rhythm.
That's
fair.
So, and I know it's tough to do now when there's so much. And, like, do you really want to try something for six episodes? But, you know, they're quick. They're short. And, you know, I think that the subsequent seasons are just so, so, so good. And it's so right up your alley, I think, just based on everything we've talked about. I think you'd really love it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Everything that you guys just said is exactly the issue. Like, the characters, I could not connect with them. I'm like, they're just kind of these rich, preppy characters, and there's some heart, but like not enough for me to invest in. So, okay, fine. I'm going to go back to it.
Yeah, there's a switch that happens. I would probably say around episode 5 or 6.
Right when I stopped watching.
Right,
you're saying?
Pretty much. Perfect. 5 or 6, okay, great. Yeah.
Well, I will check it out per your suggestion, guys. So
Awesome. All right. So that's a wrap on
all right
episode of TVBFFs. Thank you. Thank you so much to our guest, John Thrasher. John, where can we find you?
You can listen to my true crime podcast, Shaken and Disturbed, wherever you're listening to this podcast, most likely. And you can follow me on social at jthrasher. I'm on TikTok at johnthrasher. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, please rate, review, and subscribe and check us out on Instagram at tvbffpodcast. Or you can email us at tvbffpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, please. We would love to hear from you all. So reach out and send us your six. We want to know what are your top six shows of all time and where they fall on your own personal BFF criteria. So send us your picks and we'll share some of our favorites on the podcast. And until next time, goodbye, friends.
Bye, friends.
Thanks, guys. Bye.